Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Now, all day today, you've heard little bits and snippets of Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker thinking he was talking to his puppet master, David Koch. Oh, and by the way, you folks that are keep writing to me and tell me his name is not pronounced Koch, it's pronounced Koch or Koch, stop it. It's pronounced Koch, okay? Thank you. You've heard snippets all day. We have the entire transcript. We're going to play it for you, the whole 20 minutes. We're going to break it into three or four chunks. I think Kathy's still working on it. Ian Murphy is the guy who recorded this, the guy who presented himself as, talk about an Andrew Breitbart moment, huh, you slimy bastards. Ian Murphy, according to Wikipedia, is a gonzo journalist and editor of the Buffalo Beast, an online mag that was founded in 2002 as an alternative biweekly by Matt Taibbi, who you know at Rolling Stone, and a band of his colleagues. Ian Murphy is probably best known for a tough read about America's war dead called F, you know, the Troops. But his latest post at the Buffalo Beast, which he calls Koch Horror, is to be believed. And it's going to be read much more widely. Now, later on today, a couple of updates. Scott Walker's office confirms that the recording of a call between the governor and the writer posing as David Koch is real, and that it is actually Walker on the recording. And the office of Scott Walker released this statement, quote, "The governor takes many calls every day. Throughout this call, the governor maintained his appreciation for and commitment to civil discourse. He continued to say that the budget repair bill is about the budget." The phone call shows that the governor says the same thing in private as he does in public, and the links that others will go to disrupt the civil debate that Wisconsin is having. I like the part where Ian Murphy, as David Koch, refers to Mika Brzezinski's ass. You'll hear it. Walker kind of talks over it, but Walker agrees that Mika Brzezinski has a great ass. And that, what's his name? Joe Scarborough, I'm sorry, is kind of a lightweight. But anyway, we thought we would do that for you tonight to make your evening enjoyable. Before we get to that, though, there's a couple of things here. An Arizona jury in Tucson has sentenced to death one of the so-called border activists, 43-year-old Shauna Ford. She now becomes the third woman on Arizona's death row. She's a right-winger, a teabagger, a militia type. She was sentenced to death for the 2009 murder of a young girl and her father. Shauna Ford was convicted of first-degree murder and other charges in the May 2009 home invasion of Arivaca, a desert community about 10 miles north of Mexico. In that attack, Shauna Ford and her accomplices went in there. They thought they would break in this guy's home and find lots of drug money that they would then use to finance their terror activities in the United States. Shauna Ford is a terrorist, and she's going to be executed now. The 29-year-old father and his 9-year-old daughter were shot dead in the robbery. They tried to shoot the wife, but she fired back, and they fled. So, 43-year-old Shauna Ford sentenced to death. I'm not in favor of the death penalty, but I wonder now, all these teabag sons of bitches who are in favor of the death penalty, what are you going to do now, folks, huh? Also, a former, we talked about this about 8 months ago, former juvenile court judge Mark Schiavarella in Scranton, PA, was convicted in an alleged Kids for Cash scheme that accused him and another judge of sending youthful offenders to for-profit detention centers in exchange for millions of dollars in kickbacks from the builder and the owner of the lockup. This is a Republican. This is a conservative. This is a criminal son of a bitch who is now going to go to prison. He is 61 years old, ex-judge, left the bench in disgrace 2 years ago after prosecutors charged him with engineering one of the biggest courtroom frauds in U.S. history by using juvenile delinquents as pawns in a plot to get rich. Now, I want you to hear this. Have you got the audio tape? All right, this is from... it's from a news report. We just took it right off the air. And I want you to hear the mother of one of the kids that this filthy son of a bitch sentenced to juvenile detention for having marijuana paraphernalia. And it was so bad for the kid that that after he was released, he committed suicide.
Do you need to be? Do you remember me? Do you remember me? Do you remember my son? An all-star wrestler? He's gone.
This mother's rage and fury greeted former Judge Mark Schiavarella as he exited court Friday. Schiavarella sent Sandy Fonzo's son to juvenile detention for possession of drug paraphernalia. Years later, he killed himself.
Prosecutors say Schiavarella was involved in a Kids for Cash scandal. He's accused of taking $1 million in exchange for putting juvenile defendants into private detention centers, though that's something he denies to this day.
Absolutely. Never took a dime to send a kid anywhere. If that was the case, that would have been in this trial.
In one reported case, he sentenced a child to 2 years for joyriding in his mom's car. Some of the kids he ordered locked up were as young as 10. In 2009, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court dismissed 4,000 cases Schiavarella handled, saying they had no confidence in his rulings. On Friday, he was found guilty of 12 of 39 charges, including racketeering, money laundering, and conspiracy, but was not charged with extortion.
No, you know what he told everybody in court? They need to be held accountable for their actions. You need to be.
Schiavarella remains free at this time, but he's expected to get a minimum prison sentence of 12 years behind bars. Sandy Fonzo doesn't consider that justice. For Good Morning America, Lindsay Davis, ABC News.
So this piece of human excrement, this former juvenile court judge, hopefully he will go to prison for 12 years. The jury verdicts related to nearly $1 million that was kicked back to the judge. He was convicted of 12 counts, including racketeering and conspiracy. I mean, every time one of these Republican right-wing bastards lifts his head up, somebody else suffers. And Newt Gingrich. What about Newt Gingrich? What about the fact that people are finally starting to speak up in this country? Really? Former Speaker Newt Gingrich got an unpleasant preview last night of what may lie ahead if he decides to launch a campaign for president. He was at the University of Pennsylvania, and he was challenged by a student there, a Democratic student, to square his moralistic stand on social issues with the fact that he was a adulterer while he, you know, when he was married in the 90s. Politico and the Daily Pennsylvanian both reported this story. Isabel Friedman, president of the Penn Democrats, a student organization, said, quote, "You adamantly oppose gay rights, but you've also been married 3 times and admitted to having an affair with your current wife while you were still married to your second. As a successful politician who's considering running for president, what would set the bar for moral conduct? Who would set the bar for moral conduct and be the voice of American people? How do you reconcile this hypocritical interpretation of the religious values that you so vigorously defend?" That was the question put to this scum-sucking, another piece of human waste, Newt Gingrich. Now, when we come back after this break, I'll tell you how Gingrich answered, and you won't be surprised. Oh, my God. I can't wait till we get to the... Coke, quote, quote, Walker discussion. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
All your child is offered in your defense. If you're perfectly comfortable. flying monkey free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Just a couple of minutes. We're going to play the transcript, the audio, the entire audio between the Gonzo writer posing as one of the Koch brothers and Scott Walker, who thought he was talking to his whore master. By the way, this hour of the Mike Malloy Show is sponsored by L.A. Truth Seekers in honor of two truth warriors. The message says, in Los Angeles especially, the truth seekers almost always feel starved for real information. Two truth warriors, Mike Malloy and Harrison, never let us down. Please check out GoHarrison.com for a daily punch. And this comes from Debbie in L.A., Rita, Carol P., Gandhi for Today, Karen in Oxnard, Tim from L.A., Paul K., Michael K., and Stephen in Burbank. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. All right. Now, back to this. Newt Gingrich is giving one of his phony-ass speeches at the University of Pennsylvania, an Ivy League school of all places, where he's putting out his hypocritical garbage like Newt has done for decades, when a student there challenges him and says, as a successful a politician who's considering running for president, who would set the bar for moral conduct and be the voice of American people, how do you reconcile this hypocritical interpretation of the religious values that you so vigorously defend? The fact that, you know, he's a serial adulterer, he's a liar, he's a sneak and a cheat. Now, Gingrich didn't take kindly to the question. No, he didn't. So Gingrich answers this way. I'll bet almost everyone here can gather the thrust of your question. I appreciate the delicacy and generosity in the way it was framed. I hope you feel better about yourself. You miserable little twit. Gingrich, of course, is now on his third or fourth wife. I don't know. Followed with his take on his political viability. He says then, quote, I've had a life which on occasion has had problems. See, it's problem. Is that what you considered that Bill Clinton had, you phony bastard? Problems? Is that how you treated Clinton? Problems? Yeah. I've had a life. I've had problems. Then he went on to say this, and this is what pisses me off about these Christians. You know what a Christian can do? These phony-ass evangelicals who are not, they don't believe in God, they don't believe in anything. They're just terrified of their own impending deaths, because everybody dies! But this is the part that pisses me off. He says, I believe in a forgiving God. Right. See, these kinds of Christians can live a life of they can be a Hitler. Hitler, according to the Christian doctrine, Hitler, just before he puts the bullet in his head or his mouth, wherever he put it, he says, oh, by the way, Jesus, I confess my sins. And according to Gingrich and the rest of these morons, then Jesus looks down from heaven and says, you are forgiven, my son. Welcome into the kingdom of God. Right. Newt Gingrich. What a chunk of human waste, like so many of these people are. My God. When we come back from this next break, that's when we're going to... now, we're going to do this in chunks because it is fairly... It's 20 minutes that we've had to break in. We don't have a 20-minute segment on this program anywhere. But we are going to play the entire thing for you. So you can hear what this... I get the feeling that Scott Walker... wants to get naked with the guy he thinks is David Koch. I mean, he just sounds like a little twit, a little I don't know. It's the damnedest thing. And I don't mean get naked for sex. I don't mean that. I mean get naked to show that he is totally subservient to David Koch. This totally subservient. Anything, David. Listen, and like so many of these arrogant sons of bitches on the right, you're going to hear Scott Walker just go on and on and on about himself, about how he's changing the history of America and the labor movement. And he's just, boy, he's just out there. He's just leading the pack. And of course, quote David Koch, end quote, just lets him ramble. That's the part I like about this. Koch doesn't give him any setup questions. He just lets this arrogant son of a bitch go on and on and on. Ian Murphy is the guy, but I'm going to refer to him in his character, David Koch, because that's who Scott Walker thought he was talking with. All right, we'll get to it as soon as we come back from the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
First day of the first month in some distant year, the whole sky froze gold. Some said it was the aftermath of the radio bomb, while others told of a final retribution, a terrible revenge of the gods.
Helping of truth, it's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. All right. Oh, by the way, this hour, let me just mention again, this is sponsored by the LA Truth Seekers in honor of two truth warriors. That would be Mike Malloy and Harrison on the Edge. You can check out Harrison. He was on that Progressive Cruise with us. Wonderful, wonderful guy. You can go to his website, GoHarrison.com. And the sponsorship is from Debbie in L.A., Rita Hart, Carol P., Gandhi for Today. I like that one. Karen in Oxnard, Tim from L.A., Paul K., Michael K., and Stephen in Burbank. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, very much. All right, let's start this. It starts with Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, answering the phone. And remember, the person claiming to be David Koch is Ian Murphy, a journalist and editor of the Buffalo Beast, an online mag that was founded about almost 10 years ago as an alternative biweekly. It was founded by Matt Taibbi and a band of his colleagues. All right, let us begin. Go ahead, Kath.
Hi, it's Scott Walker.
Scott, David Koch, how are you?
Hey, David, I'm good. And yourself?
I'm very well. A little disheartened by the situation there, but what's the latest?
We're actually hanging pretty tough. Amazingly, there's a much smaller group of protesters, almost all of whom are in from other states today. The state assembly is taking the bill up, getting it all the way to the last point it can be at where it's unamendable. But they're waiting to pass it till the Senate's in. But the assembly Democrats, have about 100 amendments they're going through. The state Senate still has the 14 members missing, but what they're doing today is bringing up all sorts of other non-fiscal items, many of which are things that the members on the Democratic side care about. And each day we're going to ratchet it up a little bit. The Senate Majority Leader had a great plan he told them about this morning. He told the Senate Democrats about, and he's going to announce it later today, and that is the Senate Organization Committee is going to meet and pass a rule that says if you don't show up for two consecutive days on a session day in the state Senate, the the Senate chief clerk, it's a little procedural thing here, but can actually have your payroll stop from being automatically deducted into your checking account. And instead, you still get a check, but the check has to be personally picked up, and he's instructing them, which we just loved, to lock them in their desk on the floor of the state Senate.
Now, you're not talking to any of these Democrat bastards, are you?
There's one guy that's actually voted with me in a bunch of things. I called on Saturday for about 45 minutes, mainly to tell him that, well, I appreciated his friendship, but he worked with us on other things, told him why I wasn't going to budge. Mainly because I thought he's about the only reasonable one over there, and I figured if I talked to him, he'd go back to the rest of the gang and say, you know, I've known Walker for 20 years. He's not budging.
Now, what's his name again?
His name is Tim Cullen.
Now, who can we get to budge on this collective bargaining?
Well, I think in the end, a couple of things are, one, I think the paycheck will have an impact. Secondly, one of the things we're looking at next, we'll probably announce in the next day or two, we've been working with our Republican leaders in the legislature, is we're still waiting on an opinion to see if the unions have been paying to put these guys up out of state. We think there's at a minimum an ethics code violation, if not an outright felony.
Well, they're probably putting hobos in suits.
Yeah.
That's what we do. Sometimes.
Well, paying for the senators to be put up. I know they're paying for these guys to be in. No, you can, I mean, people can pay protesters to come in. I mean, that's not an ethics book, but I mean, literally, if the unions are paying the 14 senators, if they're paying for their food, their lodging, anything like that, we believe at a minimum it's an ethics code violation. And it may very well be a felony misconduct in office because technically it's not just a political contribution. It is, if they're being paid to keep them from doing their job, we think that's there's legally an obstruction, not of justice, but an obstruction of their ability to do their job.
Yeah.
And we still got the Attorney General's office is looking into it for us.
Oh, good.
So we're trying about four or five different angles. Each day we crank up a little bit more pressure. But the other thing is I've got layoff notices ready. We put out the at-risk notices. We'll announce Thursday. They'll go out early next week.
Layoff notices.
And we'll probably get 5,000 to 6,000 state workers will get at-risk notices for layoffs.
Oh.
We might ratchet that up a little bit, too.
Oh, okay.
Beautiful, beautiful. Got to crush that union.
Is that it? That's the first segment? Beautiful, beautiful. Got to crush that union. So, to the protesters the protesters, you know that 5,000 or 6,000 notices are going to go out Thursday. We got time for another segment? Go.
The other thing we may do, because the senator I mentioned thinks that these guys, you got a few of the radical ones, and unfortunately one of them is the minority leader, but most of the rest of them are just looking for a way to get out of this. You know, they're scared out of their mind. They don't know what it means. There's a bunch of recalls up against them. They'd really like to just get up back here and get it over with. And so the paycheck thing, some of the other things threatens them. I think collectively there's enough going on. As long as they don't think I'm going to cave, which, again, we have no interest in. An interesting idea that was brought up to me this morning by my chief of staff, we won't do it till tomorrow, is putting out an appeal to the Democrat leader that I would be willing to sit down and talk to him, the Assembly Democrat leader, plus the other two Republican leaders. Talk, not negotiate, and listen to what they have to say. If they will in turn, but I'll only do it if all 14 of them come back and sit down in the state assembly. They can recess it to come back over and talk to me, but they'll have to go back there. The reason for that is we're verifying it this afternoon, but legally we believe once they've gone into session,
trickery,
they don't physically have to be there. If they're actually in session for that day and they take a recess, this 19 Senate Republicans,
you sneaky
could
bastard,
then go into action and they'd have a quorum because they started out that way. So we're double checking that, but that would be the only, if you heard that I was going to talk to them, that would be the only reason why is we would only do it if they came back to the Capitol with all 14 of them. So my sense is, hell, I'll talk. If they want to yell at me for an hour, you know, I'm used to that. I can deal with that, but I'm not negotiating.
Bring a baseball bat. That's what I do.
I have one in my office. You'll be happy with that. I got a slugger with my name on it. So it's this is ground zero. There's no doubt about it. But I think, you know, for us, I just keep telling my – I tell the Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader every night, give me a list of people I need to call at home, shore them up. The New York Times, of all things, I don't normally tell people to read the New York Times, but the front page of the New York Times has got a great story. One of these unbelievable moments of true journalism.
Yeah. Oh.
It's supposed to be objective journalism. They got out of the Capitol and went down one county south from the Capitol to Janesville, to Rock County. That's where the General Motors plant once was.
Right, right.
They moved out 2 years ago. The lead on this story is about a guy who was laid off 2 years ago. He's been laid off twice by GM, who points out that everybody else in his town has had to sacrifice except for all these public employees. And it's about damn time they do, and he supports me. And they had a bartender. They had, I mean, every stereotypical blue-collar worker type they interviewed, and the only ones that weren't with us were people who were either a public employee or married to a public employee. It's an unbelievable story. So I went through and called all these handful, a dozen or so lawmakers I worry about each day, and said, every one of you should get that story printed out and send it to anybody giving you grief.
Goddamn right. We sent Andrew Breitbart down there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
He's our man, you know. Now, just coincidentally, during the third hour, not coincidentally at all, during the third hour, I'm going to take apart the New York Times story that this filthy son of a bitch was just talking about, this the soon-to-be ex-governor. Under the headline in New York Times, union bonds in Wisconsin begin to fray. And the point that they're trying to make here, that the New York Times is trying to make, that this is what Scott Walker calls objective journalism, the point the newspaper tries to make is that union workers who are out of work are starting to get pissed off at union workers who are still at work. And, of course, the Republicans know how to exploit that. And also, DailyFinance.com, which is part of AOL.com, a piece about after Wisconsin, this could be the end of labor unions. Well, I've got a lot to say about this, and I'm going to just rip the skin off these people during the third hour. So don't you dare go away. We'll be right back with more of Mr. Coke and Scott Walker, who is obviously a Coke sucker. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Okay, let's move on. In that last segment, Coke says, goddamn right, we sent Andrew Breitbart down there, and Governor Walker says, yeah, and Coke says, yeah, and Walker says, good stuff, and Coke says, he's our man, you know. Let's go back to Walker.
You know, we've had all the national shows. We were on Hannity last night. I did Good Morning America and the Today Show, and all that sort of stuff was on Morning Joe this morning. We've done Greta. We're going to, you know, keep getting our message out. Mark Levine last night.
Oh, good.
And I got to tell you, the response around the country has been phenomenal. I had Brian, the new governor over in Nevada, call me last night and said he was out in the Lincoln Day circuit the last two weekends, and he was kidding me. He's new as well as me. He said, Scott, don't come to Nevada because I'd be afraid you'd beat me running for governor.
Oh.
That's all they want to talk about is, what are you doing to help the governor in Wisconsin? You know, the next question, I talk to Kasich every day. You know, John's got to stand firm in Ohio. I think we can do the same thing with Rick Scott in Florida. I think Snyder, if he got a little more support, probably could do that in Michigan. I mean, you start going down the list, you know, a lot of us, there's a lot of us new governors who got elected to do something big.
You're the first domino.
Yep. This is our moment.
Yeah. What else? Now, what else could we do for you down there?
Well, the biggest thing would be, and you're on the ground probably seeing
Stop it a second.
The,
Stop it a second.
Well, two things. One,
do you get this? This filthy capitalist booger-eating bastard, this Coke billionaire, at least Walker thinks it's him. What else can we do for you down there? And Walker doesn't miss a beat. Government of, by, and for the people. Hey, people of Wisconsin who voted for this scum-sucking little bastard, what do you think? Who do you think your governor answers to? Go ahead.
And your guy on the ground probably seeing this is two things. One, our members originally got in and got freaked out by all the bodies here, although I told them an interesting story. After I was first elected county executive in Milwaukee, of all places, first budget I put through was pretty bold, aggressive. The union went nuts on me and got all sorts of grief, but a couple weeks later, I'm in a Veterans Day parade, and I'm going down the line, and usually, unless you're a veteran or, you know, we're marching with a veterans group, politicians all get polite applause, but nobody gets up. I come down the line, 40, 50 people in a row, hands up, thumbs up, you know, cheering, screaming, yelling.
Oh, they love you. They just love you, Scott.
And then after about 40 or 50 people like that, there's a guy flipping me off.
Oh.
Great thing. The people who know it's right will cheer you. They'll applaud you. They'll run through a wall for you. And the people who don't like you, they're going to flip you off.
No.
But stop worrying about, you know, them, because the other day there were 70,000, probably two-thirds were against the bill, one-third were for, 70,000 people at the Capitol. All week there's been, you know, 15 to 30,000 a day. But I remind all our lawmakers that there's 5.5 million people in this state. And just because a bunch of guys who can jump off of work because of their union bills doesn't mean the rest of the people in your district aren't with them. So one thing for your question is the more groups that are encouraging people not just to show up, but to call lawmakers and tell them to hang firm with the governor, the better. Because the more they get that reassurance, the easier it is for them to vote yes.
Right.
The other
right.
thing is more long term, and that is after this, you know, the coming days and weeks and months ahead, particularly in some of these more swing areas, a lot of these guys are going to need, they don't necessarily need ads for them, but they're going to need a message out reinforcing why this was a good thing to do for the economy, a good thing to do for the state. So to the extent that that message is out over and over again, that's obviously a good thing.
Right, right. We'll back you any way we can. But
that was it. We'll back you any way we can. By now, you know what you're listening to. Ian Murphy, a journalist and editor at the Buffalo Beast, which is an online magazine that was founded about 9 years ago as an alternative biweekly. It was founded by Gonzo journalist Matt Taibbi, who now works for Rolling Stone, or writes for Rolling Stone, and a band of his colleagues. Ian Murphy is probably best known for a tough read about America's war dead called F and the rest of it, the troops. But this latest post, which he calls CoCor, is likely to be read a lot more widely. Now, when we come back from the break, we have another, what, two segments? Okay. Now, what have we learned so far from this interview that the governor of Wisconsin thought he was having with David Koch? First of all, we've learned that Walker and the Senate Republicans are conspiring to withhold Democratic lawmakers' paychecks. We learned that Walker sees billionaire David Koch as, quote, one of us. We learned that Walker is planning to threaten state workers with layoffs. 5,000 to 6,000 people will be laid off. Walker has a plan to lie to Senate Democrats and pass the bill while they are not aware of the vote. Walker considered planting fake protesters to cause trouble among the real protesters. We also learn that Walker is just thoroughly corrupt. It's astonishing to me. This geeky little bastard, Governor Walker, Scott Walker, somehow got himself elected governor of Wisconsin. Now, we said this a couple of months ago let's just put the Republicans in and watch what they do. Now, I have a question for you people in Wisconsin, you right-wing knuckle-draggers. How do you feel now knowing that your governor is a wholly owned subsidiary of Koch Industries?
I like that the governor outed all these other governors. You know, who the governor of Nevada,
right.
Who the governor of Florida, who the governor of Michigan. They're all behind me. It's like,
right. I mean, this is, it's time for, it really is. It's just time for complete, open dissent, civil disobedience, and bring this craziness to a stop. That's what it's time for. We'll be right back. Some more. What you've been listening to, if you've been listening, is, and we're just about finished here, a 20-minute phone call today that was recorded by Ian Murphy, who is a journalist and editor of the Buffalo Beast, an online magazine that was founded in 2002 as an alternative biweekly by Matt Taibbi and some of his friends. You know who Matt Taibbi is from Rolling Stone. Murphy called Walker's office. And this is, it's so typical. Scott Walker probably either has his head 20 feet up his ass or he's got his head 2,000 feet above sea level. Scott Walker now thinks he's this hero. He's getting all this attention. He's being invited onto all kinds of programs. Everybody's listening to him. He's making all kinds of deals with the other Republican Nazi governors. And so Murphy calls in and says he's David Koch. Well, obviously, Walker is just going to spill his guts. Now, if you've been listening to this, you hear Murphy doesn't say anything. He just tosses out a couple of lines and lets this arrogant, self-referential little twit ramble on. All right, let's continue. Where are you going to start it? Where Koch says, we were thinking about the crowd planning some troublemakers. You want to start there?
Well, we were thinking about the crowds was planting some troublemakers.
You know, the only problem with the because we thought about that.
Hold on.
The problem with,
we thought about that. The governor of Wisconsin makes a statement. When he thinks he's talking to David Koch, and Koch says, we were thinking about planning some troublemakers, and Walker says, you know, we thought about that too. You son of a bitch.
The problem with, or my only gut reaction to that would be, right now, the lawmakers I've talked to have just completely had it with them. The public is not really fond of this. The teachers union did some polling and focus groups, I think, and found out that the public turned on them the minute they closed school down for a couple of days. The guys we got left are largely from out of state, and I keep dismissing it in all my press comments, saying, "Yeah, they're mostly from out of state." My only fear would be is if there was a ruckus caused, is that that would scare the public into thinking maybe the governor's got to settle to avoid all these problems. You know, whereas I'm saying, hey, you know, we can handle this. People can protest. This is Madison, you know, full of the 60s liberals. Let them protest. It's not going to affect us. And as long as we go back to our homes and the majority of people are telling us we're doing the right thing, let them protest all they want. So that's my gut reaction, is that I think it's actually good if they're constant, they're noisy, but they're quiet, nothing happens. Because sooner or later, the media stops finding them interesting.
Well, not the liberal bastards on MSNBC.
Oh, yeah, but who watches that? I mean, I went on just morning, Joe this morning, but I like it just because I like getting being combative with those guys. But, you know, they're off.
Well, Joe's a good guy. He's one of us.
Yeah, he's all right. He was fair to me. I mean, the rest of them were a little out there. Although I had fun. They had Schumer over from New York on. Ripping me.
Stop right there.
And then they had a little clip of the state senator hiding out.
Okay. As soon as he finishes more talk about himself, the Coke character says, "Beautiful, beautiful. You got to love that Mika Brzezinski. She's a real piece of ass." And it gets overtalked by Governor Walker. But listen to this. Go ahead.
And then they had a little clip of the state senator hiding out, ripping me. And it was almost too easy. I walked in, Joe asked me a question. So, well, before I answer it, let me just put out the amazing irony of the fact that you've got a United States senator from New York, a senator who, by the way, is part of a team that can't seem to balance the federal budget, talking about my budget. He should come into work to talk about something, although it's mine. And you got one of these 14 state Senate Democrats who can't even bother to show up and deal with the budget he's elected to do some of.
Oh, my God.
And so that kind of tells you the whole story right there.
Beautiful, beautiful. But you got to love that Mika Brzezinski.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, I'd known Jim before, but I was having dinner with Jim Sensenbrenner when I came into D.C. for a day to do an event and was going over to the Greta Show. I had dinner with Congressman Sensenbrenner, and right next to us was the two of them, and then their guest was Axelrod. So I came over and I introduced myself.
That son of a bitch.
Yeah, no kidding, huh? Introduced myself, and he said, I figure you probably knew who I was since your boss was in campaigning against me, but it's always good to let them know you know what's going on.
It's always good to let them know you know what's going on. How do you feel now, Scott Walker, now that we know what's going on? You little punk.
I want to know how all those other governors feel now that he outed them. co-conspirators in his union busting plan.
That's the first rule of microphones, you know, the first rule of telephone calls. You don't say anything that you wouldn't want to say to the people you're talking about.
How about that old Democratic state senator's going to be pretty upset also? The one that's, he's in my pocket.
Yeah, I got
he's
him.
He's my
yeah.
boy. He what? Worked in the private sector. He made some real money.
What's his name? Mullen? Tim Cullen.
He's probably not very happy today.
Tim,
you know who's really not happy today?
Cullen.
David Koch is not a happy billionaire today. He's a sad little billionaire.
Well, no, he can just say, hey, this is typical Democratic dirty tricks. This is what the filthy Democrats and the filthy unionists do. This is why we, my brother and I, are trying to save America. You know, I don't give a goddamn what Koch says, thinks, or does. What I care about is how the politicians respond to these bastards. And the big story here is how willing the governor of Wisconsin is
to talk to the person he thinks is a billionaire who put him in office, as though he's talking to his priest, as though he's doing a confession, as though it's Wednesday night in the local parish priest. That's what's revealing about this.
Yeah, anybody. First off, there's no question now how you pronounce Koch brothers. But also, anybody who had any thought that, you know, this guy was not a wholly funded subsidiary of Koch Incorporated.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that should just be off the table. I mean, you don't talk about bashing people with baseball bats and sending out pink slips and what you're going to do to end the unions with somebody like Koch if you don't have a well-established relationship.
Now, let me just add that. Well, we don't have time. I'll do it when we come back, because we're going to do the last segment when we come back. And then there's some other stuff that is tangentially related to what's going on in Wisconsin. One of these pieces I have for you is directly related, but I think it'll kind of stun you also. Some of you may already know what I'm going to talk about here, but and then don't forget the third hour, because I'm going to strip the skin off some of these bastards the third hour. By the way, this hour is sponsored by LA Truth Seekers. It's the same group. Debbie Newell sent it in. It's signed. Debbie in L.A., Rita Hart, Carol P. Gandhi for Today, Karen in Oxnard, Tim from L.A., Paul K., Michael K., and Steven in Burbank are also sponsoring the second hour here. And they ask you to please check out Go Harrison, GoHarrison.com. Bob Kincaid of the Horn Radio and I and Harrison had a very interesting week a couple of weeks ago. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. All right, let's get back to the final segment of this 20-minute phone call that the governor of Wisconsin, Scott Walker, thought he was having with his overseer, his overlord, Mr. Koch. In fact, it was journalist. Not David Koch, it was journalist Ian Murphy, editor of the Buffalo Beast online magazine, founded years ago by Matt Taibbi and some of his friends. And again, the thing that I find so shocking is the willingness that Scott Walker, the willingness with which he just pours out his guts to the person he thinks is his overseer. Scott Walker is an evangelical Christian.
Oh, there's a big surprise.
And he was an Eagle Scout. An Eagle Scout. On my honor, I will do my best to do my duty to God and my country, to obey the scout law, to keep myself physically strong, mentally awake, and morally straight. The Boy Scouts of America ought to just rip his Eagle Scout status right off his goddamn chest. Let's finish it up.
Well, good, good. It's good catching up with you.
Yeah, well, thanks. This is an exciting time. This is, you know, I told my cabinet, I had a dinner Monday right after the 6th. Came home from the Super Bowl where the Packers won. That Monday night, I had all my cabin over to the residence for dinner. Talked about what we were going to do, how we were going to do it. We'd already kind of built plans up, but it was kind of the last hurrah before we dropped the bomb. And I stood up and I pulled out a picture of Ronald Reagan. And I said, you know, this may seem a little melodramatic, but 30 years ago, Ronald Reagan, whose 100th birthday we just celebrated the day before, had one of the most defining moments of his political career, not just his presidency, when he fired the air traffic controllers. And I said, to me, that moment was more important than just for labor relations or even the federal budget. That was the first crack in the Berlin Wall in the fall of communism, because from that point forward, the Soviets and the communists knew that Ronald Reagan wasn't a pushover.
Oh.
And I said, this may not have as broad a world implications, but in Wisconsin's history, literally I know how big it would be nationally, Wisconsin's history, I said, this is our moment. This is our time to change the course of history.
Oh.
This is why it's so important that they were all there. I had a cabinet meeting this morning. I reminded him of that. I said, for those who thought I was being melodramatic, you now know he was purely putting it in the right context.
Well, I'll tell you what, Scott. Once you crush these bastards, I'll fly out to Cali and really show you a good time.
All right. That would be outstanding. Thanks,
right.
Thanks for all the support and helping us move the cause forward. And we appreciate it. We're doing it the just and right thing for the right reasons, and it's all about getting our freedoms back.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have a little bit of vested interest as well.
Well, that's just it. The bottom line is we're gonna get the world moving here because it's the right thing to do.
All right. Then.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Astonishing. And regarding the personality type that Scott Walker is, Prairie 2 nails it here, the authoritarian personality disorder is what's involved here. As Prairie 2 writes, as many as 20% of Americans suffer from authoritarian personality disorder. The fact that Scott Walker, desperate to strip rights and protections from workers under his control, dovetails with his unquestioning obedience to Koch, who is clearly his master. In his world, Scott Walker's world, he would really use the baseball bat in his office on his underlings, but would kiss the ring and other body parts of anybody over him. The similarity to the Third Reich is not a coincidence. Once these people have that much power, that's exactly how they will behave. It's in their nature. They crave it. That is so true. Scott Walker, to me, is the perfect Adolf Eichmann. As Hannah Arendt wrote in her book about the trial of Eichmann, she referred to the banality of evil. The banality, it is just... It's dirt under your foot. It doesn't mean anything. The banality of evil. Scott Walker would have handled the final solution that Hitler wanted for the Jews with the same kind of attitude that he handles when he thinks he's talking to David Koch. Subservient, we'll get the job done. Don't worry about me, boss. I'm a good little Nazi. We'll be back.
He lies. He must despise all the what fors and whys, the way he lies. He lies. He just lies and he lies. He can lie any time, he can lie any place. He crosses his fingers and keeps a straight face. He lies.
But the water doesn't flow. It boils.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. If you have still have speakers, 25 before the hour. Wisconsin Police Union president says, quote, "We will absolutely carry out orders to use force," if that's what the governor of Wisconsin, the butt boy of David Koch, orders. This is how it's reported. Amid the largest protests Madison, Wisconsin has seen in decades, newly elected Republican Scott Walker last week issued a stark message to public labor unions. He said, "We have options, and using the National Guard against protesters is among them." Since then, myriad of rumors have circulated through crowds gathered at the state capitol, united in a protest of a bill that would strip unions, yada, yada, yada. One rumor, which is not had not yet come to pass, even suggested that, like Egypt's former dictator did in Tahrir Square, Governor Walker may call in police to forcibly clear out the capitol. And according to a Wisconsin police union president, whether the police agree or disagree with their governor's politics, they would absolutely carry out any order given to them, even if that order included using force against their fellow Americans gathered in peaceful protest. That's the message from Wisconsin Law Enforcement Association Executive Board President Tracy Fuller, whose organization recently issued a statement condemning the governor's attempt to strip public unions of their collective bargaining rights. Fuller is also a Wisconsin State Patrol inspector. He recently wrote in a post found on the law enforcement website, quote, "This bill has some provisions that make no sense unless the basic intent is to bust unions. One provision makes it illegal for public employers to collect dues for labor organizations. The employer can take deductions for the United Way or other organizations, but they are prohibited from collecting union dues. How does that repair the budget?" End quote. Fuller, the head of the board president, Law Enforcement Association, explained to Raw Story that he was speaking only for himself when he wrote of his regrets over the trooper's endorsement. Well, it doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know what the hell is going on here. If I doubt seriously that American troops or police would beat or club, well, something like this. I mean, sure, I've never been beat before, but I have been tear gassed. That was on federal property. I've been arrested for protesting, but not, you know, not. I don't know. I don't know anymore. Now, this we found kind of interesting here. On Saturday night, this is Adam Weinstein writing at MotherJones.com. On Saturday night, when Mother Jones staffers tweeted a report that riot police might soon sweep demonstrators out of the Wisconsin Capitol building, something that didn't end up happening, one Twitter user sent out a chilling public response. It said, quote, "Use live ammunition," end quote. From my own Twitter account, Adam writes, "I confronted the user, JC CentCom. He tweeted back that the demonstrators were, quote, political enemies and, quote, thugs who were, quote, physically threatening legally elected officials," end quote. In response to such behavior, the guy said, "You're damned right I advocate deadly force." Later, he called Adam Weinstein a, quote, typical leftist, adding, "Liberals hate police," end quote. Only later did they figure out that J.C. CentCom was a deputy attorney general for the state of Indiana. Are you hearing me? Deputy attorney general of the state of Indiana advocating deadly force. That means killing protesters exercising their First Amendment rights in Wisconsin. Are you hearing me? A deputy attorney general for the state of Indiana advocating the killing, the shooting. That's what deadly force is, and that's what it means by use live ammunition. The killing of legal, constitutionally legal protesters in Wisconsin. One of the 144 attorneys
in the office of the Attorney General for the state of Indiana. Jeff Cox has represented the people of his state for 10 years. And for much of that time, it turns out he's vented similar feelings on Twitter and on his blog. This is who they're talking about, Jeff Cox. ProCynic. That's his blog, ProCynic. Early Sunday, Mother Jones sent an email to Cox's work address at the Indiana Attorney General's office asking if the Twitter and blog comments were his and if he could provide context for some of them. He responded shortly after from a personal email address, quote, "For context or to silence me? All my comments on Twitter and my blog are my own and no one else's, and I can defend them all. You will probably try to demonize me, but that comes with the territory," end quote. So here you have one of the top law enforcement officers in the state of Indiana advocating killing, opening fire, killing protesters in another state. Now, what do you call that if it's not terrorism? What do you call that? According to what we have now, this Deputy Attorney General was fired. This is what it says. This is from several web sources. Quote, "The Indiana Attorney General's office announced this afternoon its Deputy Attorney General is no longer employed by the agency after reviewing political website Mother Jones' published allegations that he advocated the use of force against protesters in Wisconsin." God damn it, it wasn't the use of force. It was killing them! Killing them! Killing them! According to the online article, Jeff Cox tweeted, "Use live ammunition," in response to a Mother Jones tweet reporting riot police had been called into the state capitol to remove protesters. Tim from L.A., who sent a comment about this, said, "I wonder how many people Jeff Cox put in prison under the Patriot Act for making the same terroristic threats." Jeff Cox should be jailed. But he won't be, you know. He won't be. Why should he? By the way, this hour has been sponsored by the L.A. Truth Seekers. And they ask you to please check out GoHarrison.com for a daily punch. What does that mean, a daily punch? Like, I don't know. Check it out. And it's signed Debbie in L.A., Rita Hart, Carol P., Gandhi for Today, Karen in Oxnard, Tin from L.A., Paul K., Michael K., and Stephen in Burbank. You all are great. Thank you very much for sponsoring two of the hours tonight. I really appreciate it. And again, coming up third hour, next hour, we're going to be talking about one of the pieces that Scott Walker referenced in his conversation with the person he thought was David Koch, his overseer. And that is an article that appeared in today's New York Times. And the writers take the position that union people are in Wisconsin unemployed union workers are starting to get, and not just unemployed, but marginally employed union workers are starting to get tired of listening or hearing about or dealing with the public employees. This is how it always works. This is what these capitalist sons of bitches have done historically. They pit worker against worker, black worker against white worker. This factory group against that factory group. This city against that city. Give us more tax breaks and we'll stay here. If you don't, we'll go, we'll take our jobs where the tax breaks are even greater. Now, I went through this whole thing last night about the Koch brothers, or about, was it the Koch brothers last night? Never mind. The Koch brothers, who made their money, the family made its money, as we talked about, by helping the Soviet Union build its energy infrastructure back in the 20s and 30s so that the Soviet Union could become the 50-year-long Cold War adversary of the United States. And in addition to that, that's only secondary. Primary was the fact that the Soviet Union used the infrastructure that the Koch brothers, the Koch family helped them build, used that infrastructure to subjugate the people of how many countries? And this son of a bitch, this David Koch, this multi-billionaire, is the person that Scott Walker owes his political life to. We'll be back.
Old Mary Jane, she step on a train, head for the city light. Yearning inside, swim with the tide and taste it all right. Bag on her shoulder, put in the cold, down by the metal tree. It's a cold breath.
Ten before the hour. And thanks again to our second hour sponsors here, the LA Truth Seekers. And they would like you to check out GoHarrison.com. GoHarrison.com. Thanks, guys and girls. I'll tell you what I'm going to do this next hour. It's time that we strip the bark off of Michael Dell. Dell Computers. Yeah, that's what we'll do. Stick around for the third hour. Michael Dell. You probably have a Dell computer in your house, right? I got one right here. Oh, man. And Mother Jones again. This is thanks to Josh Harkinson writing at Mother Jones. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. Michael Dell, come on down. Providence, Rhode Island officials have issued pink slips to every single public school teacher in the city, all 1,926 of them. This is late breaking news. They aren't going to be fired, not all of them. The pink slips are meant to be warnings of what might come with the budget cuts that are looming. This is Rhode Island. Since the law requires that teachers are informed by March 1st if they're going to be laid off that year, officials inform them all. Just in case. Providence School District is facing a $40 million deficit for the upcoming school year. Teachers' union said it was appalled at the city's decision to terminate all Providence public school teachers. President of the Providence Teachers Union, Steve Smith, said, quote, "This unprecedented action sacrifices the best interests of Providence students and teachers in the name of flexibility." Oh, and then there's this. at Huffington Post, a Pew study, the Pew Center, Pew Research Center, nonpartisan Pew Research Center, points out that while Scott Walker has painted a dire picture of the state's pension obligations, the Wisconsin Pension Fund for Public Employees is among the nation's strongest. The Pew report issued last year concluded that Wisconsin is a, quote, national leader in managing its long-term liabilities for both pension and retiree health care, end quote. Now, Walker has cited the fund's lack of sustainability as grounds for his plans to destroy collective bargaining rights for state employees. But that proposal has sparked outrage and drawn all those people to the state capitol. Walker said in an interview last Sunday with Chris Wallace on Fox, where else, quote, "We're going to ask our state and local workers to pay a little bit more to sacrifice to help to balance this budget," end quote. But the Wisconsin Pension Fund is simply not in trouble. Its managers weren't burned by subprime mortgage assets or mortgage-backed securities as the housing bubble collapsed. The fund also relies on an automated dividend system which pays out benefits in years the system is making gains while restricting payouts in years when it takes losses. And while the pension fund had a rough year during 2008 due to stock market losses, it remains robust, both in terms of fundamental financial stability and in comparison to other state pension programs. According to the Pew study, Wisconsin has about $77 billion in total pension liabilities in 2008. But according to that same Pew study, those liabilities were 99.67% funded. 99.67% funded, giving Wisconsin one of the four highest of such ratios in the nation. Other states had funding ratios as low as 54%. For comparison, expert analysts in the Government Accountability Office consider an 80% level to be a good benchmark for pension fund stability. Wisconsin has 99.67% funded in the pension fund for state workers, public employees. So, in addition to being a cowardly little punk for David Koch, Scott Walker is a liar. Scott Walker is a liar. How do y'all like these Republican, how's that Republican leadership thing working out for you, huh? Hey, all you people in Wisconsin that voted for him, you like it? You like it? Huh? Oh, and the people that used to listen to us on the mic, what's it like listening to, what's his name? Alan Colmes. Oh, my God. What else we got here? I guess that's it for this hour. I think it's great. In that interview, the guy who was playing the part of Koch, what's his name? Ian Murphy. Did absolutely nothing except, hi, how are you, Scott?
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Damn straight.
He's one of us.
He's one of us. Unlike these scumsuckers on the right, like this piece of human waste, Breitbart, who deliberately sets people up. All our phony Koch did was say, hi, Scott, just checking in. What's going on down there? What's shaking? What you doing, baby cakes? This is your big daddy. What do you need? What do you need, huh? All right, stick around, because I'm going to give Michael Dell a new body orifice when we come back. Well, I'm not going to. I'm just going to share with you what Josh Harkinson wrote at Mother Jones. But it's going to be a blistering attack. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
27 past the hour. As promised, I've got some little odds and ends here, but last night we talked about the Koch brothers and how un-American they are in reality, their entire family fortune. If you want to know what I'm talking about, get the podcast and listen to last night's show. Tonight, this hour, it's about Michael Dell. You have a Dell computer in your house, don't you? Huh? This guy's a piece of work. It's in Mother Jones' current issue. On the cover, it shows a very good likeness of Bela Lugosi sinking his fangs into the neck of Miss America. The cover says the vampire economy, the super rich are sucking America dry. But inside, I want to do this because I don't know how many people get Mother Jones. Unless you get it, you're just not going to know about this unless you hear it here. Josh Harkinson is the reporter, writer for Mother Jones, who put this together. As Josh says, before he became the 15th richest American, Michael Dell was hailed as a corporate wunderkind. His eponymous computer company's dazzlingly efficient factory in Austin, Texas, according to the New York Times, quote, may be the best hope of keeping blue-collar jobs in the United States, end quote. That was in 2004. The New York Times said that about Michael Dell. Recently, Dell Inc. has been better known for gobbling up federal contracts and pulling financial shenanigans to line its executives' pockets, all while exploiting tax loopholes, outsourcing production, and laying off American workers. Now, I have a little history for you here. 1984. Ooh, Mike, that's a million years ago. 1984, Michael Dell is 19, and he builds and sells computers from his University of Texas dorm room in Austin. He drops out, and by 1987, 3 years later, Dell computer sales hit $60 million. Think of the year, 1987. 1992, at age 27, Dell becomes the youngest CEO ever to make the Fortune 500. 1993, Dell Inc. builds its headquarters in an Austin suburb, lured by sales tax rebates, property tax cuts, and $50 million in tax-free financing. Austin's mayor calls Dell, known for his made-in-the-USA computers, a model corporate citizen. 4 years later, 1997, Dell and his wife, Susan, build a $30 million, 33,000-square-foot granite and stainless steel mansion with 8 bedrooms, a gym, an indoor pool, 21 bathrooms. Dubbed the Castle for its elaborate security, it is appraised at $22 million. The Dells argue it's worth only $6.5 million, you know, for property tax reasons. And the county eventually settles at $12 million. God damn, the rich really are different from you and me, aren't they? Huh? Oh, by the way, in 1997, the feds fined Michael Dell $50,000 for selling computers in Iran. Oh, and Michael Dell is Jewish. Well, we all know that Iran is building nuclear weapons to bomb Israel. And they need computer technology. Oh, my goodness sakes alive. Another traitorous American. 1998. Michael Dell forms a private equity firm, MSD Capital, to manage his family's money. Today, their $12 billion in assets include a $100 million collection of Magnum photos, dollar rent-a-car, real estate in Hawaii, Mexico, and California, and the companies that run Applebee's, IHOP, and Domino's. Also in 1998, Dell Inc. opens production and sales center in China, overseen by a subsidiary. By 2010, it has subsidiaries in 77 countries, including holding companies in tax shelters such as Bermuda and the Caymans that allow Michael Dell to avoid at least $3.7 billion in U.S. taxes. In 2010, Dell paid a tax rate of 7.5%. How much did you pay? Truth seeker. Hey, teabag dumbass. How much did you pay? But I digress. A year later, 1999, Dell gets an estimated $200 million in city and state incentives to build a factory in Nashville, Tennessee. $200 million. The city and the state are so desperate. 3 years later, half of the plant's jobs are relocated to a nearby town where Dell gets another $6 million in tax breaks. Woo! Also in 1999, George W. Bush names Michael Dell to head Bush's Campaign Information Technology Advisory Council. Also in 1999, Dell Inc. becomes the country's top personal computer seller. Dell himself writes the best-selling Direct from Dell Strategies That Revolutionized an Industry. In the year 2000, a year later, Dell Inc.'s stock price hits an all-time high. Also, the New York Times declares Michael Dell the richest Texan ever. By the way, he's now number two. He's number two in, never mind. Also in 2000, Dell buys two ranches outside Austin for an estimated $75 million. One gets its property taxes slashed 99.8% by Michael Dell claiming an agricultural exemption. The proof that he should be entitled to an agricultural exemption on the ranch are turkey feeders, birdhouses, and a deer habitat control. Consequently, the taxes are reduced 99.8% for this poor, miserable son of a bitch, Michael Dell, the billionaire. Recently asked by Time about reducing his carbon footprint, Dell answered, quote, I'm sequestering way, way more than I'm using. I have a lot of land and a lot of trees, end quote. Oh, and also in 2000, Dell and his wife give $250,000 to the Republican National Committee. A year later, 2001, Susan Dell's personal fashion label, Phi, makes Jenna and Barbara Bush's inaugural gowns. Also in 2001, President Bush appoints Michael Dell to his President's Council on Advisors on Science and Technology, which warns that outsourcing is destroying the U.S. tech industry. Really? Outsourcing. Okay, keep that in mind. Oh, also in 2001, Dell builds a four-story villa on the exclusive Caribbean island of Anguilla. Anguilla, or you may pronounce it Anguilla. 2003, Dell Inc. replaces its call center employees with part-time temps. Annual turnover soars to 300%. Also in 2003, Michael and Susan Dell Foundation give $250,000 to a charity run by then-House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, who was later convicted of illegally funneling corporate money to candidates. Maybe through his charity? No, couldn't be. Also in 2003, you remember the Dell dude? Dude, you're getting a Dell! Remember that guy? He's busted for pot possession. 2003 was not a good year. Whatever happened to him? All right, there's more. We're only up to 2003. We have a couple more years to go. So we're going to take a break. Stick around. We're talking about Michael Dell in the current issue of Mother Jones, written by Josh Harkinson, how a homegrown geek outsourced, downsized, and tax-braked his way to the top. Bootstraps my ass! Woo!
Underground.
Uh-oh, he just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We're talking about Dell Computers. Michael Dell, American magnate. Michael Dell, American super business star. Michael Dell, right? You've got a Dell computer in your house, don't you? Everybody does. You know, he's a multi-billionaire. Can you imagine building a 33,000 square foot house with 21 bathrooms? Unless you're full of an awful lot of, poop. 21 bathrooms. Jesus, I like to have the money that these freaks spend on toilet paper, right?
You just want to cook him and eat him.
Yeah, cook him and eat him? No, I would do something other than that. But anyway, we're talking about how another American corporate elitist rat bastard takes advantage of this poor, broken-down country's lack of regulation, this poor, broken-down country's allowing capitalist thugs to do anything they want to do, steal, lie, loot, cheat, don't pay their taxes, move jobs offshore, get tax breaks from local taxing entities, and then leave town in the middle of the night. And these are the same sons of bitches that always say to people, well, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. I pulled myself up by my jock strap. You use your bootstrap bear, Sparky. We're up to 2004. In 2004, Dell Inc. employs more workers overseas, 23,800, than it does in the United States, 22,200. Oh, God. Also in 2004, after heavy lobbying by Dell Inc., Congress passes the, listen to the title, American Jobs Creation Act. Wow! Which, in fact, lets U.S. companies repatriate overseas profits. That means bring them home. At a one-time tax rate of 5.2%, rather than the normal 35%, Dell brings home $4 billion. Now, don't you like the title? Listen to that. Huh? American Jobs Creation Act, which allows these slimy sons of bitching capitalists that have been hiding all their profits, avoiding taxes, cheating, lying, stealing, as they always do, to bring home the loot. They're like pirates. They're like Somali pirates. How many people have they killed? Who knows? But they're just like pirates. Ah, we got the loot, arg. Let's take it home now, mateys. We got Congress to pass a law for us, didn't we, there? Arg! Michael Dell, super pirate. Oh, in 2005, a year later, Michael and Susan Dell give $250,000 for President Bush's second inaugural celebration. Lunch money, chump change. He had it in his wallet. Here you go, George. Keep the change. 2006, President Bush says, quote, it's tough in a time of war when people see carnage on their Dell television screens. End quote. Yes, he said that. Bush said that. It's tough in a time of war when people see carnage, when people see carnage on their Dell television screens. Also in 2006, Dell Inc. recalls 4.1 million laptop batteries that have a tendency to explode. 2006 also, Dell Inc. discloses that it's been audited by the Securities and Exchange Commission. It says it won't reveal details of any misconduct, but revises 4 years' worth of their financials. Revises. Oops! Oops! Kind of like Supreme Court Justice Uncle Clarence Thomas. Oops, did I forget all that money my old lady made over the past day? Oh, damn, I'm sorry. I just forgot it. Michael Dell does the same thing. Oops, Oh, what do we do here? Oh, my goodness. The same year, 2006, Dell Inc. says it's doubling its factory and call center staff in India to 20,000 people. 2007. Well, we'll do 2007 when we come back from this break. We only have 3 years to go. 2007, 8, 9, 10. Or is that 4 years? We are taking a look at the great corporate predatory capitalists in this country who destroy everything they touch. They trade with enemies of the United States. In the case of the Koch brothers the other night, they traded with, they've set up the Soviet war machine. George W. Bush's family set up the Nazi war machine. Michael Dell, well, he provides computer technology to Iran, who needs it so they can develop their nuclear weapons to bomb Israel. Which is kind of ironic when you consider that Michael Dell is Jewish. Oh, well.
Flying monkey free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
Can't touch this. Look, man. Can't touch this. You better get hyped.
25 before the hour. Okay, we're talking about Michael Dell. We've been talking about crooks and liars and sons of bitches all night. We do almost every night, and they all happen to be right-wingers. They all happen to be Republicans. A couple of them are governors. The way these right-wing neo-fascist capitalists manipulate the system, steal, lie, cheat, do anything that they can get away with, legal or illegal, it doesn't make any difference because they have lots of attorneys who, when they're caught doing something illegal, oh, well, okay, that was our bookkeeper, but we'll sign a consent order which says we didn't do it, but we'll never do it again. How much is a fine? $25 million? Here you go. And they continue. Michael Dell is right up there in the top echelon of liars, cheats, sneaks, and thieves, plus the fact that he sends all the jobs he creates to India or China or Vietnam, or God knows where. He also does business with one of the countries George W. Bush labeled as part of the Axis of Evil, Iran. Michael Dell provided them with lots of technology, computer technology, just like the Koch brothers or the Koch uncle or grandpappy, whoever it was, provided Joe Stalin with all kinds of oil and gasoline technology, drilling technology, chemical technology, so that Stalin could launch a 50-year war with the United States. Or we launched it with him or somebody. But there's money to be made in war and death and destruction, asked Smedley Butler, who declared war to be a racket. But I digress. 2007. Michael Dell returns as CEO after a three-year hiatus at Dell. Less than 6 months later, his compensation exceeds $153 million. Woo! That's because he worked a lot of overtime, right? Making him the sixth highest paid CEO in the United States, his benefits include more than $1 million for security. Second only to Oracle's Larry Ellison, security, so that none of the riffraff, no hoi polloi, will get to him. He is, after all, Michael Dell. By the end of 2007, Dell Inc. announces 8,800 layoffs, about 10% of its global workforce. Michael Dell, and Dell Inc. is not making enough money. He only made $153 million that year. Well, time to get rid of these sons of bitches. I need more money. I need more money. I need more money. Bootstraps. Also in 2007, investors sue Dell Inc.'s executives alleging inflated profits and billions in secret kickbacks from chipmaker Intel. The company settles for $40 million. Here's your $40 million. Now go away. Here you go. I got it out of petty cash. Here. Scram. Wow. Secret kickbacks? No. Not an American capitalist. Wouldn't do it. Couldn't think about doing it, right? Also in 2007, customer service employees filed a class action lawsuit claiming that Dell Inc. routinely underpaid them. Can you imagine that? Customer service employees. I guess that would be the Indian staff. Dell Inc. routinely underpaid them. Routinely underpaid them. Routinely underpaid them. Huh? The case is settled out of court. Shh. How much you want for this? $20 million? Here. Shh, shh, shh. Lunch money. Petty cash. Now go away. Also, in 2007, New York Attorney General Andrew Cuomo sues Dell Inc. for luring customers into expensive finance plans. You remember those? You want a computer? Here, take this and $20 down. Ah. In the fine print? Andrew Cuomo, New York Attorney General, sues Dell for luring customers into expensive finance plans. In 2009, a couple of years later, Dell Inc. settles another case with 34 state attorneys general and agrees to reform its marketing and financing practices. 34 state attorneys general? Oh, my goodness, I bet you some of them were Republican. What do you think? 2008, Dell Inc. announces $3 billion in cuts, including the closure of an Austin plant, eliminating 900 jobs. It imposes a hiring freeze, offers buyouts, and asks workers to take unpaid days off. Hey, workers! God damn it, I'm only going to make $300 million this year. Take some unpaid days off there, boys, will you? You girls, too. We're equal opportunity gougers here at Dell. Unpaid days off. And also in 2008, four former middle managers filed a sex and age discrimination suit. None of Dell Inc.'s 14 top executives is a woman. 2009, Dell Inc.'s quarterly profits fall by nearly half. Its shares lost 80% of their value since 2004. The company announces another $1 billion in cuts. Also in 2009, opposition by Michael Dell helps defeat a proposal that would require federal stimulus money to be spent on American-made goods. What? You don't want it spent on American-made goods, Michael? Why not? Dell Inc., the 43rd largest federal contractor, now makes most of its computers abroad. Oh, I see. Federal stimulus money? I thought you right-wing sons of bitches hated that. Oh, no, you don't want that money. You don't want any of that money, do you? Well, of course he did. So he helps defeat a proposal that would have required federal stimulus money to be spent on American-made goods. Isn't this guy a real American? Isn't he a true blue up by your bootstraps American, huh? Isn't he? Wow. Also in 2009, Lebanon, Tennessee threatens to sue Dell Inc. for eliminating 700 of the 1,000 jobs it had offered as part of a tax deal. This is where Dell sits down with local officials and says, all right, here's what I'll do. You give me this land free and the water free and the utilities free and give me a tax abatement and give me this free and give me that free and give me the other thing free and give me all this free. And I'll come build a factory here and give some of your dumbass white people 700 jobs. How's that? How's that? Huh? I want everything free. So Lebanon does it. But then Dell turns around, eliminates 700 of the 1,000 jobs it had offered as part of the tax deal. Lebanon, Tennessee threatens to sue. Dell Inc. then shutters its last large factory in North Carolina and sends the 900 jobs there abroad. Goodbye. Brrr. Goodbye. Have a nice trip. Okay, see ya. Aha, I'm not making enough money. Also in 2009, Michael Dell's MSD Capital and other investors buy the remains of the failed IndyMac Bank from the FDIC. They put up $1.3 billion and they get a $158 billion mortgage servicing portfolio. Woo! The FDIC, which expects to lose up to $9.4 billion on the deal, promises to reimburse the investors for their potential losses. Guess who picks up that tab? Right. The taxpayers. By year's end, the new bank has made $700 million in profits, and a New York judge excoriates its, quote, harsh, repugnant, shocking, and repulsive service practices. You know, throwing people out of their homes, turning people into the street. Get out of my goddamn house! I own it now! But I'm unemployed. I have three children. Get out! Well. Oh, also in 2009, Susan Dell closes her little personal fashion label, Phi. Remember Phi? Citing the poor market for items such as $1,495 suede harem shorts. Ooh, just the market kind of tanked, right, Susan? Goddamn, what are you going to do? Well, you'd get a big tax write-off. $1,495 suede harem shorts? Also in 2009, Michael Dell's net worth hits $14.5 billion. Oh, that year he bills his company $4 million for using his private jet. Reportedly the priciest flying habit of any public company's CEO. He bills his company. Dell Inc., you owe me $4 million. Just here, make the check out to cash. 2010. We're almost done, almost finished, just a little bit more. And again, great thanks to Josh Harkinson at Mother Jones, writing under Plutocracy Now! American magnate Michael Dell, how a homegrown geek outsourced, downsized, and tax-braked his way to the top. Notice it doesn't say anything about bootstraps.
Hearing aids, new shoulders and new legs. My dad needs a break, he works all day every day. My brother needs a place and a job where he can be.
Finish on this little travelogue through the wonderful world of Michael Dell that seems utterly devoid of bootstraps, but is chock-a-block with tax breaks, lying, stealing, thievery, sending jobs overseas, deceit, and, you know, your typical corporate capitalist American CEO's tricks. We're up to 2010. Since 2008, Dell Inc. has cut 7,300 jobs in the U.S. while creating 4,300 jobs overseas. You know, the little brown people work a lot for a lot less. They're hungrier, you know, and they'll eat, you know, they'll eat bark, they'll eat carrots, they'll eat pieces of concrete that fall in the street, you know. Dell Inc. announces a flagship factory and customer center in China that will employ 3,000 people. It plans to spend $100 billion in China over the next decade. Foxconn, the Taiwanese company that makes many Dell PCs, erects suicide nets around the dorm's roofs after 12 workers jump to their deaths. Oh, Michael, you're just, I don't know, your capitalism is just so straight from hell. You know what I mean, Michael? Also in 2010, White House seeks to end a tax loophole. Oh, that would be the Obama administration, goddammit. White House seeks to end a tax loophole that has let Dell Inc. save $546 million. That's half a billion in 3 years by transferring patents and other properties to foreign subsidiaries. This is why we employ the lawyers, Malloy. Goddamn. According to Bloomberg Businessweek, Dell lobbyists targeted the plan. The company denies it. What? What? We did what? When? Who? Where? How? Say again? I don't know. What? Who? Huh? What are you talking about? Where? Over there? Over here? Up, down, sideways? Ella. Also in 2010, Dell Inc. discloses that it's received nearly $1 billion in tax holidays. Is that like President's Day? What do you do on a tax holiday? Go buy furniture. Dell discloses it's received nearly $1 billion in tax holidays from governments around the world in the past 3 years. Yes, indeed. The little brown people, the little funny looking people, they do anything for me. I'm Michael Dell. I'm a tall white man. I bring jobs. I bring wampum. I bring glass beads and little trinkly things that will amuse and delight you. Also in 2010, Dell Inc. and Michael Dell agree to pay $100 million and $4 million, respectively, to settle Security and Exchange Commission charges that they improperly hid $6 billion in payments from Intel. Remember Intel? You remember Intel? It's a $6 billion. Oh, they hid it. They improperly hid it. There's a proper way to hide it, Michael. You improperly hid it. That's why the government came after you. Also in 2010, Michael Dell gives $2,000 to Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell, bringing his family's total federal campaign contributions to more than $920,000. Well, gosh, that's just shy of $1 million, 99% of which went to Republicans. Really? Well, that's a shocker. And by the end of 2010, Dell Inc. shares have gained nearly 80% from February's 2009's low. Michael Dell tells Reuters news agency that one of his biggest problems is finding skilled American workers. He says, quote, I want to put a massive we're hiring sign out, end quote. But apparently, he just can't find any skilled American workers to put more money in this rat bastard's pockets. Well, I'll tell you what, Michael. You have all sorts of people around the world. Those little brown people, little red people, little yellow people, little green people that you can exploit the hell out of. Put your signs out there, as you have done through the whole history of your stinking, filthy, capitalist pig career. Michael Dell, another example of bootstrap capitalism. Yes, indeed. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps like Michael Dell did. All along the way with his fraud and graft and lies and deceit and sneaking and hiding and cheating and lying and stealing and exploiting and burning and looting and destroying anything he gets his hands on, if he can make a profit at it. Oh, and let's not forget the Iranian thing. I just don't want to forget the Iranian thing. The Iranian thing. In 1997, the federal government That would have been Bill Clinton. Uh-huh. Fines Dell $50,000. Pocket change. For selling computers in Iran in violation of sanctions. Which is the real staggering part of this to me. All the other stuff pales by comparison. Michael Dell is Jewish. Iran needed the computer technology in order to further their nuclear technology. If the nuclear technology is furthered to the point of weaponry, according to Benjamin Netanyahu, then Iran will immediately attack Israel and burn 6 million Jews into dust. That is unless Netanyahu strikes first. But right in the middle of it, Michael Dell. My goodness. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.